The following articles appeared in the Thursday, September 13, 1917 edition of the Thompsonville Press, Thompsonville, Connecticut. Established 1880. Single copy, 5 cents. The press has a larger circulation in the territory between Hartford and Springfield than any other newspaper. It pays to advertise in it. Inside masthead. Notice to reader. When you finish reading this newspaper, place a stamp on this notice, hand same to any postal employee, and it will be placed in the hands of our soldiers or sailors at the front. No wrapping, no address. Straight from the heart. A few of the many expressions of appreciation from the boys in khaki who were remembered by the Red Cross and Town Committee. The press has a large number of letters from the boys in khaki, all expressing heartfelt appreciation of the remembrance of them by their townfolk through the comfort kits sent out by the local Red Cross. The letters speak for themselves. More will be published next week. Letter from George Chalian, Great Lakes Naval Training Station, September 8, 1917. Gentlemen, this is to let you know that I received the comfort kit you sent, safe and sound. I thank each and every member of the committee and all those connected with it for the most useful and practical combination of necessities and even luxuries that the bag contained. A certain mother wrote to me recently saying that we boys couldn't realize how much it meant to the folks at home to hear from us, and urged us that we drop a message, no matter how small, whenever it was possible. That condition reversed applies equally as well. You folks at home cannot imagine how very much it means to us to know that you are all interested in our welfare and stand ready to do anything that you can to make it easier for us while we are away from the comforts and security of home and friends. Let me say that those who had to do with the selections of the articles contained in the kits showed fine judgment, and it seems that they acted on experience. I'm sure that every boy who is fortunate enough to get hold of one will be overflowing with thanks to you, and will be more than ever pleased that he comes from Thompsonville, where they don't forget the boys. Thankfully and sincerely, C. George Chalian. Only one to receive kit. To the editor of the press, I would like very much to thank the Thompsonville Red Cross Society through the press for their comfort kit that I received today. It made me feel very good when I opened my package and took that bag out with the cross on the side. It certainly makes a fellow feel proud of his little village and the good work that is being done to help the boys in the service. In reading the press that I received, I noticed that our little village has now quite a number of boys with the colors, and the great send-off that they are getting to speed them on. I take great interest in also reading the press, away down here where we never get much news from the north. It is very warm here at present, and the boys from the north drop here quite frequent, and we have to sleep with mosquito netting hung over our cots to prevent the malaria mosquito from getting us during the night. I am the only boy in our camp to receive the Red Cross comfort kit so far, and they are from all over the states down here. That makes me feel proud of my little hometown up in Connecticut. Hoping that the good work keeps up, and that with 3 cheers, the Red Cross Society. I thank you in advance. Private Harold V. Purdy, Camp Sheridan, Montgomery, Alabama. More than pleased. J. L. Freeman, Sergeant Overseer, Quartermaster Corps, New York, son of the manager of the press, writes as follows. I wish you would thank the Thompsonville Red Cross people for the comfort kit, which came to me a few days ago. It is fine, and I knew that every boy who receives one will be more than pleased. All of the Massachusetts boys who passed through the city last week had sweaters, knitted helmets, and wristlets given them by the Red Cross organizations of their hometowns. September 3, 1917. Editor, Thompsonville Press. Please give our sincere thanks to the Enfield Red Cross for the presents we received today. We are pleased with them, and we thank your committee for the presents. The Thompsonville chapter opened the way, and we hope all other cities will follow our city in that respect. We expect to leave for France as we are part of the 16th Infantry, which is on the front. Signed, Gregory Petrohilos, Charles Altapamakis, Rokopio Svetsika, John Kalagarag. Happiest moments in camp, September 11, 1917. Editor of the Press, I wish to extend to you my thanks for your kindness in sending me a copy of your paper each week. I can say that some of my happiest moments in camp have been spent reading the press. Wishing you success, I am Lawrence Thomas Downey, H.J. Seaman Training Station, Newport, Rhode Island.
Next article.
No hands, works. Maimed soldier goes home and learns to do things. Designs and manufactures apparatus which enable him to almost ignore his mutilation. One French farm is being cultivated by a former soldier who lost both hands in the war. Jean-Baptiste Ledrin is the man who has overcome his handicap. When the war was declared, Ledrin was a young, handy mechanic, accustomed to repairing plows and reapers. At the call to arms, he rejoined his battery as a cavalry sergeant. He distinguished himself by manning a bomb mortar and advancing with the infantry to the attack of a strong redoubt. This exploit earned him the rank of under-lieutenant. After fighting safely through many battles, Ledrin was wounded near Arras, and upon his recovery was transferred to the infantry, says a correspondent of the Chicago News. In his new position, the young under-officer, because of his mechanical ability, was assigned to the grenade section, where he soon became proficient. Finally, he became an instructor. It was while instructing some young soldiers about to leave for the front that Ledrin received his terrible wounds. The new recruit produced an experimental grenade from his pocket and gave it to Ledrin. The instructor began his lesson, releasing the fuse lighter, which, unfortunately, was connected with a loaded grenade, and not one as used in practice. The grenade exploded, killing six men and wounding several others. Ledrin was pounded in five places, a broken rib, right eye put out, one eardrum pierced, and his two hands carried away. This was in 1916. In spite of his injuries, Ledrin's fiancée remained faithful, and 2 months later received a letter written by her future husband. In January 1917, they were married, and Ledrin is now cultivating his father-in-law's farm. Putting his ingenuity to practical use, the former soldier has been able to design and build apparatus which enable him almost to ignore his mutilation. He can hitch up and drive a horse, driving by sitting on the loop of the lines and guiding with his arranged forearms. He can load and unload the wagon and care for the horse and manage a team as well. The whip passes through a ring in the right arm equipment. By means of a special harness, Ledrin can work in the fields as well as anyone. A steel plate strapped on the body and supplemented with leathers for the arms support the interchangeable tools which are needed to perform various operations of farm work. On the left arm is carried a ring through which the handle of the rake or shovel slides like it would through the hand. The right arm is equipped with a socket and set screws in which the tools can be placed and fixed. There is a complete assortment of farm tools and special hooks. The farm soldier takes off his working arms, and his wife adjusts a pair of elastic gloves, which accommodate the smaller articles of daily use. With these gloves, Ledrin can write, shave, eat, and dress himself. He drinks by taking the cup between the two elastic gloves. Combing his hair, brushing his teeth, and adjusting his collar become simple operations to this injured man, who has solved for himself one of the great problems of the war.
Next article.
Editorial. The Home Guard. The parade of the Home Guard in Hartford last Saturday afternoon gave the people of that city and of this part of the state an opportunity to see for themselves what the organization known as the Home Guard actually is. They saw that it is a splendid body of earnest men who have made surprising military progress in a few months. The guards made a fine appearance, and the impression left in all minds was that they were a strong and distinct addition to the defense of the state. They take the place of the National Guard now in federal armies, and they are ready to meet such emergencies as may come. As a matter of fact, the detent effect they have had on seditious outbreaks and discouragement of lawlessness is unquestionably great. It was particularly pleasing to Winfield people to note the fine bearing, training, and personnel of the Thompsonville Company. We were all proud of them, and strangers, too, were not slow to compliment. Unfortunately, says the Bristol Press in its comment on the parade, there were some things about the occasion that were not so gratifying. Hartford was a distinctly dull proposition, and if it felt any enthusiasm or appreciation, it has kept it in cold storage so long it could not be thawed out in time for use. There was an astonishing absence and almost no saluting as the colors went by. Evidently, it takes a circus parade to appeal to Hartford and wake it up. That the press is not alone in this opinion was shown by the Hartford Courant Monday morning, which said editorially, quote, "Very few people in the entire line of the march saluted the flag by removing the hat or by any other sign. This was equally true of eminent citizens standing on the curb of Asylum Avenue and of more humble persons at other points along the line of march. In fact, it was noticed particularly that most of those who removed the hat seemed to be of foreign birth. The most flagrant evidence of disrespect was shown by members of the police department, who should set a good example in this particular. They did not remove their hats or come to attention or show by any sign that they were conscious of any duty to perform as an act of honor to their country's flag. This applied not only to patrolmen and traffic officers, but to sergeants and others' minds of all at this time when higher in rank. Our flag is one of the most to be honored in the whole world today, and we should be even more proud of it when the war is over. Hereafter, let this city be the first in this country in its outward respect and honor to the flag, beginning with the policemen and firemen, then throughout the whole body of citizens and school children."
Next article.
Editorial. "This is no time for favoritism. The past week has been one of many heart pangs. There have been many mothers who were called on to stand by and see their boy, perhaps their only one, march away to take his place in the training camp to prepare for service, perhaps in a foreign land, in order to uphold all that this country stands for in the way of liberty. Our town, with many others, during the past few weeks and days, has seen many of her sons in khaki and has wished them good luck and sent them on their way with a God bless you. Each and every one of these boys have shown by their bearing and in their face that they have caught the vision of what it means to be an American. The American soul has been born again. Friday evening, those of our young men who have been chosen through the selective draft were given a farewell parade and demonstration. These young men will now go someplace in this country, whence, after a few weeks of intense training, they will set sail from an American port for somewhere equally indefinite on the other side of the Atlantic. When they are on the sea, danger will confront these loved ones of ours. We have in mind the horrors and the brutal methods of the pirates of the Spanish Main, but their acts were tame in comparison with those of more modern pirates masked as German culture. The gunners of our ships will have to fight for the lives of our troops before the battle line will be reached, and before they shall have set foot on a foreign shore, they will have been called upon to face all the horrors of war, and that waged not there in the open, but in cowardly, creaking manners. But, come as it will, be no flinching on the part of our boys, for they go, imbued with the spirit of their fathers, to be given all even to life itself for the defense of their cherished liberties, and which they have sworn allegiance, gives as a challenge to all who should in any manner attempt to curtail them. American troops, more than anyone has any idea of, have already landed in France and England, and have made the impression on the commanders and people alike that they will stand for no foolishness, that they are there for business. When the conduct of the Prussians is considered, when they stole tons of provisions sent from this country for the relief of starving Belgians. Then the belief of all is that not a pound of anything edible should be permitted to go anywhere that they can lay their hands on them. This war is the survival of a strong, and the weak of necessity must suffer. The American people are in this war to the last gasp, and nothing that can be done to cripple the brutal, heartless enemy should be overlooked. This is not the time for favoritism, and this fact should be impressed on the minds of all at this time, when parents are bidding Godspeed to sons who have been their hope and pride to fight for humanity and liberty. There is a strong spiritual side to the events of these days. Mothers' hearts have been wrung with anguish, and there has been a mental struggle on the part of fathers between parental pride and the pang of parting, knowing as they do that their boys go out to the somewhere. There is the danger of their also entering into that mysterious somewhere from whence none has ever returned. So, farewell, boys. Good luck. God bless you. Your people and your townsfolk will remember you, and their prayers will follow you.
Next article.
How to visit the landship recruit when you go to New York. This paper will supply you with a visitor's ticket. Navy recruiting station and training ship in Union Square, now one of Manhattan's sights. Coupon will admit you. Everyone visits New York sometime. Not a day passes that its railways and steamboat lines fail to bring thousands of transients from every part of the nation. It is always thronged with sightseers, and there is always something new to see. Just now, when the nation is at war, the keenest interest is naturally displayed in everything that pertains to the armed services and their preparation for overseas duty. Thus, New York and its visitors have found one of the chief points of interest to be the United States ship recruit, right in the heart of the city where young men by the hundreds have been recruited for the Navy, and where the routine and daily life of a big battleship is carried out in every detail, and this too on Broadway. Built through the energies of Blaine Ewing, chairman of the Subcommittee on New York Recruiting of Mayor Mitchell's Committee on National Defense, the landship is located in Union Square, has completely brought new life to this section of Broadway, which has been almost deserted in the rapid rush uptown of the city's life. Now, Union Square is filled with people day and night, and there is always something going on aboard and about the ship. Here are quartered nearly 100 officers and men on the recruit, which is a perfect replica of a modern battleship. Drills take place daily. Here, all of the recruits leaving New York for training meet for a farewell gathering. Here are held daily meetings to stimulate interest in recruiting, and at night, moving pictures of life in the Navy are shown on the great screen off the stern of the ship. It is the desire of the officers and the mayor's committee to have all of the visitors of New York see this remarkable ship. For this purpose, the press herewith presents a coupon, which when clipped and properly filled out, will be honored for admission when presented to the ship. Fill this out and take it to New York with you, and then go to Union Square and see the recruit. Then, after you have made your visit, the ship's officers will have the coupon mailed back to you, hometown newspaper, showing that you have been aboard and seen this real novelty in the great and active campaign for recruits, which has been so successfully carried out by the United States Navy, the first line of defense.
Next article.
Home Guard to camp out. The Thompsonville Company, Connecticut Home Guard, are going into camp at Pine Point, Shaker's Pond, Saturday, September 15. The company will form in heavy marching order at the town building at 1:30 p.m., hike to Hazardville, and thence to Pine Point Grove, arriving at 3:30 o'clock, where camp will be formed. After the camp is made, a guard mount will be held and guards posted around the camp. Lieutenant Robert F. Kelly will be Officer of the Day. Lieutenant Amos B. Bridge, Officer of the Guards. Captain P. J. Rogers will be in command of the camp. The chief object of the encampment is to give men instructions in guard duty, the cleaning, and the ranging of the camp. Colonel C. W. Burpee, Commander of the 1st Military District, Colonel Charles E. Smith, Chief Quartermaster, and Major John Bislin, Chief Paymaster, will inspect the camp and men Sunday afternoon. The present plans of the Home Guard follows. Guard mount at 6:30, mess 6 o'clock, retreat 6:30, officers' school 7:30 to 9, taps 10 o'clock. Sunday, first call 6 a.m., reveille 6:15, setting up exercise 6:30, mess 7, drill 8 to 9, men excused from 10 to 12 to attend church, mess 1 o'clock, parade 2:30, break camp 4 o'clock, hike to Hazardville, then to Thompsonville, where company will be dismissed.
Next article.
Streets thronged as soldiers parade. Honors to drafted men. Decorated automobiles, veterans, ladies of the Red Cross and Relief Corps, Home Guards, and Italian and Polish societies in line. Speeches, free luncheon, and admission to Franklin Theater. A big celebration was given Enfield's drafted men last Friday evening. A feature was a street parade, which started in front of the town building, in the following order. Marshal Daniel J. Mullane, Platoon of Police, Carpet City Band, Enfield Home Guard, Father Matthew, Drum Corps, Italian and Polish societies, a few of the drafted men, automobiles containing veterans of the Civil War, ladies of the Red Cross and members of the Women's Relief Corps. The parade passed through the principal streets of the town and disbanded at the Hotel Square, where the large gathering was addressed by Reverend William O'Brien of St. Patrick's Church, Reverend Francis W. Dell of the First Presbyterian Church, Commander Lyman A. Upson of the Samuel Brown Post, G.A.R., former Senator Andrew Gordon of Hazardville, and Attorney V.G. Luddy. The remarks of the speakers were of a patriotic nature. After the speech-making, the draft men were entertained at the Shaker Lunch, where lunch was served them by the women of the Red Cross branch, at the close of which they were the guests of the management of the Franklin Theater at a motion picture performance, together with the Home Guard and the Civil War veterans.